Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. If any of you don't know much about us, so we are with the church in Metamora, there east of Peoria. And Josh has known me since I was born, literally. He lived on our couch a couple times, so I know him pretty well. But we're happy to be here. I'm thankful that you're all here and making a priority to come and think about these things. Tonight's going to be one of those nights where you're not going to need your Bible that much, which is always a little uncomfortable to say. But really what we're going to do is kind of survey some of the issues that we're talking about. So as you've probably seen with the flyer that was handed out, the title is, There Has to Be More Than This. And really what this is something that myself and Salem and our elders talked a little bit about, because we wanted to put together an event and not market it as a gospel meeting, but just some kind of community event to draw people in the town that we're in. And we remarked on how we talk to friends and coworkers and things like that, and people seem to think all the time, you know, there just has to be more to life than this. All these different problems that we see and that we experience points to something more. And this is just sort of playing on that idea. And so this is actually a copy of the flyer. One of our elders is a professional graphic designer, so that comes in handy. And so sort of the tagline that I wrote with all of this is that we've all faced problems that make life feel unsatisfying. But what do we do about that? What if there was a solution to it? To all of the pain and the difficulties that you face or the questions that you have, what if there was an answer to all of those things? And so that's sort of what we're talking about in this series here, and sort of getting a survey of what we're going to talk about, as I know you've seen before. So tonight is about identifying the issues. And so we're going to be looking at different things in our world right now, particularly focusing on our younger generations, because they really are sort of a signpost to what's going on. And that's kind of the what. And then tomorrow we'll start looking at the why. So why is all of that stuff happening? What is the actual problem? And then we'll look at really the grand scheme of the Bible, its whole story, and say that that is the story of how God fixed that problem. And that's really what the point of all of this is that we have. And then Sunday we'll take this question of how is Jesus then the solution to all of this, and we'll look at it from two different angles. And so really this is just kind of a big picture sort of thing that we put together and trying to communicate this to people who might not know anything at all. And so maybe you're not going to learn anything new for some of you, but perhaps you'll think about things in a way that you haven't thought about them before. Or maybe you'll hear something stated in a way that you haven't heard it before. And so that's the goal with all of this. And so tonight with this, there has to be more than this. We're going to be talking about identifying the issues. So if you pay attention at all to news and culture, you've probably become aware of topics like the declining religious faith in our society, the mental health epidemic that's happening among young people, and the fracturing and polarization of groups in our society. And you can feel that. You see it on the news all the time. Everywhere you turn, there's something horrible happening. How should we view these kind of things from a spiritual perspective? You know, as we're seeing all of these issues, and we're seeing the problems that people have and their questions, how should we think about it? And that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about tonight. So as we go through this, this is sort of our agenda for what we're going to be looking at. We're going to look at the issues facing younger people in particular. So most of what we're going to be talking about has to do with the two groups that you'll hear about of millennials and Gen Z. And really what that is millennials are people born from 1981 to 1996. And Gen Z is born from 1997 to 2012. So it's about everyone 40 down to somewhere around 20, I think, maybe. And really what the point of focusing on them is they are the largest portion of the population right now. Together, they're bigger than baby boomers and Gen X and all of that. And they're also, it's estimated by 2030, going to be 75% of the workforce by 2030. So this is the biggest portion of society, either younger adults or becoming adults very recently. And as we'll look, their experience gives us insight into what the problems are in our society. And if you're a little bit older, you might be thinking, why should I really care about that? Why should I care what Gen Z and millennials are going through? Well, first off, I want you to look around and realize that these are your grandchildren. They're your children. They might be your friends, or it might be even you. Me and my wife in particular, we're right in between both of these. And so I'm kind of at a weird point where I have no idea what Gen Z is talking about half the time. I have a sister who's 21, and half of the words that she uses, I literally have no idea what they mean. But then we see some of these people, more so Josh's age. I think he counts as a millennial. And just the common experience between all of them, and realize that these are your family members. It might be you sitting here listening to me if you're an older teenager. But these are also people who are created in the image of God and who Christ suffered for. And that's why you should care. And as we look at them, we're going to get a better idea of then what is going on in the world. What is the one real problem in this world today? You're going to get the answer to that. So all of this is going to help you know better how to reach people with the gospel. Is kind of the upshot of it all. But also, if you are a Christian, exploring these ideas sheds light on the common problems of humanity that we all face, and it gives us insight into ourselves. And as I've experienced it in my life, it applies some of these things about the gospel in ways that we don't usually apply them. And that's particularly to the emotional part of us, I think. I didn't really grow up at all hearing about how who God is and what he did applies to me as an emotional being. And a lot of us don't like talking about that kind of stuff. But as we'll go through this, you see that's really what a lot of the focus of this is, these problems, is the fact that we are reaping what we've sown in terms of neglecting that part of us as human beings. So, what are the issues facing younger people? So as we look at this, for various reasons, younger people today are experiencing higher rates of mental health issues than has ever been recorded before. I've read different studies about this, and I don't know if any of you are aware, but in 2021, the Surgeon General actually put out a report saying that this is a national health crisis. The mental health issues that we are experiencing among young people. And keep in mind, this is people from about 40 to however old 2012 is. I don't know off the top of my head. And so that's a lot of people in this room. And you probably know a lot of people that are experiencing things like this. Or it is you. But if you look around and you pay any attention to the news and things, you'll see things like suicide rates have skyrocketed. There's so many numbers on it, but something like in 2021, the rate of suicides in teenage boys, I believe it was, jumped 51% in just like a year. And if you think about it, if, say, there's 50 people in this room, that means that was affecting 20%, and then 51% more is now 30 out of 50 people. That's a lot. Or from that Surgeon General's advisory, it said in 2019, 1 in 3 high school students and half of female students reported persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. Half of girls and 1 in 3 high school students in general. And obviously, for a lot of your kids, they're not going to run up and tell you this. But this is what's going on. And they give the statistic that from 2009, that is a 40% increase, which doesn't happen. Usually you see things kind of go on a trend, but this is a giant spike. And we see things like this. Why is that kind of stuff going on? In 2019, keep in mind, that was before the pandemic stuff hit. So what we saw during the pandemic was it got even worse. And so at one point, the elected and appointed officials are saying this is an absolute crisis and we have to do something about it. But it's not something that we really do like to talk about in our society. But along the line of those kind of things, there's just rampant dissatisfaction with life and society in general. It says, if you look at all of the different information about them, an average person in these generations will talk about the pressing issues of society, whether that is, gun violence or what they see as people lacking social rights or, whatever it is, climate change, all the things that they list. They say that it makes it hard for them to live in society. That's how young people feel. All of these horrible problems we see, they just can't deal with it. Fracturing social groups, economic and social injustice, isolations, the negative effects of social media, and they list climate change and gun violence and all the other things happening in different countries, and the list goes on. It plays a horrible part in the mental health of young people. And a lot of that has to do with social media, as you could probably guess. But these and other perceived issues weigh really heavily on them because they see them as deep issues without a solution. If you have all these problems and there's no ending in sight and there's no way apparently to fix it, then what's that going to do to you? We also have an identity crisis. And so this is just one part of it, but now the most recent statistics of this is people in Gen Z. Most of these stats that I'm giving you are Gen Z focused. 1 in 5 people in Generation Z will identify as LGBTQ. 1 in 5. And to put that in perspective, that is 21%, which is double that of millennials, which was 10%, and that is over 7 times higher than that for baby boomers, which was 2.6%. What is going on? When 1 out of 5 people feel an identity crisis like this at this age on unprecedented levels. There's a problem here. That kind of stuff doesn't jump like that for no reason. And we also have issues like loneliness. And if you look at different studies, Gen Z in particular has been referred to as the loneliest generation. And that's in kind of comparing it to the silent generation and the greatest generation. That's where that verbiage comes from. But in studies that have been done on that, 73% of Gen Z report feeling alone, either sometimes or always. And they're not going to talk to you about that, probably. 3 out of 4 of people in this age group feel alone either a lot of the time or all the time. But we have social media and we have all of these things going on. So how does that make any sense? Well, apparently it's not working. Social media is, the primary medium for social connection and interaction for many of the younger generations. But what this does is it leads to something called the comparison trap, where you see the highlights of the rich and famous and how great their life is. And you say, well, I don't stack up to that. I'm not as good looking. I don't have that kind of money. I don't go on all these fancy trips. My life's not that great. And that is all that these people are seeing. And what does that do to a person? We also have things like Generation Z in particular has the lowest religious and biblical knowledge of any generation that has been recorded. And to put that into perspective, friends that Salem and I study with who are our age, so I think in particular the person I'm thinking of is 25 right now, they do not know who Adam and Eve are. They don't know who Noah or what the flood is. They don't know that the Bible has an Old Testament and a New Testament. And both these people I'm thinking of grew up going to church. They have no idea what any of this stuff is. But I think a lot of times, especially for those of us that have grown up in this, we just assume that people know stuff. But think about that. 25-year-olds don't know who Adam and Eve are. That's not in the cultural consciousness anymore. So they have nothing to answer or to inform all of these problems that they're seeing. And so what do? And that's what we're talking about. So taking this sort of idea and identifying these issues, I want to talk about spiritual trends that are seen in sort of the information and everything. And of course, I'm not a sociologist or a psychologist, but you can see these things. And if you want to look at some of the reports and all that, I can give you the links to them. But these are some of the spiritual trends among younger people. Again, about 40 and under into the teens. So actually, surprisingly, they are more likely, Generation Z in particular, to identify as spiritual or religious than older generations. Somewhere between, around 70-80% of them. That's weird, right? You wouldn't expect that. But when they survey people this age, that many, 68 to 77, depending on the specific group, will say, yeah, I would describe myself as spiritual or religious, which is way above a lot of the older generations. And this is a number from 2022, describing people 13 to 25, not very old, would say that they are spiritual or religious. But obviously, as you begin to talk to these people and you look at some of the further numbers, their definition of religious and spiritual is a lot different than probably that of other generations and most of the people in this room, I would assume. So when you look at that, these people who describe themselves or spiritual and religious, only 30% of them are connected whatsoever with some kind of religious community. Even those who describe themselves as highly religious or highly spiritual are not involved in any kind of spiritual community. That's way different than what we would usually expect or what we've seen in previous generations, right? They are continuing in this kind of line of thought, they're breaking traditional religious norms. And the reason for that, if you look at some of the surveys, is they perceive that their parents and grandparents were hypocrites, is what they say. That there was a lot of outward religiosity and spirituality, but there wasn't anything below it. Because there's all these problems in our society that they didn't fix. And that's how this is being viewed, that there is an issue with traditional religious practice, and so they're breaking a lot of those molds. And obviously there's good things about these numbers, and there's horrible things about these numbers as well. But if you look at some of these other things, and I'll have an image of this in a few moments, they would say that their spirituality is key to feeling like they're flourishing as a person. So younger people, this is Gen Z in particular, say that their key to being happy or feeling like they have a fulfilled life or are accomplishing things has to do with their being religious or spiritual. They're not going to church or doing anything like that, but it is key to them functioning as a person. And for a long time, there has been an established connection between religion and spirituality and mental health. And that's what they say, that the key to their mental health is spirituality. That's for providing reasons like purpose and social connection and support and different things like that, the pragmatic values we would think of it. But from a previous report, one that we've talked about a few moments ago, spiritual engagement shows a strong correlation with an individual's perception of their mental health and flourishing. Another thing that, again, if you watch the news or you pay attention, there is a deep concern for justice and also authenticity. Younger generations care about what they perceive as injustice, and they do things about it, whether that's good or bad. They do something about it. And they value authenticity. They see the previous generations as hypocrites, and so they're not going to be hypocrites. It's kind of the way that they're thinking about it. They care about justice, and they care about being sincere, and they feel that these things have been lacking in the world. And so that's why they're marching, and they're doing all these kind of protests, and they're getting involved in politics more so than generations older than them. And they're really different. And if you pay attention to these studies, it's kind of funny because the people who are studying all this are saying, they are so weird, we don't know how to categorize them. Because they're so different than everything that's come before. They don't fit any of the usual lines. They're breaking all of the molds. And so it's really hard to get numbers on them, and a lot of them are just now becoming adults. And so now they're being able to be studied. Here's a graph from one of those studies I was telling you about. You should be able to read that probably. But it says, religious young people say they are flourishing more than their non-religious counterparts. And this was the statement they were given, and they had to say if it was true or not. I am flourishing in my emotional or mental well-being. And so they broke it down between the very religious all the way down to the not religious. And if you read this, the bottom line is, those who identify as religious or spiritual are doing way better emotionally than those who are not. And these young people are saying the key to that is my faith. It's different than what we would be used to calling faith, but they're saying the key to my mental health and my emotional well-being is my spirituality. So what do we do about all this? You know, what kind of lessons should we learn from that? And if you want to see all of these, I can give you the links to this as well. What lessons are to be learned? So there's a few different things that we can put together about all this. And this is kind of where we start to wrap things up. First, as you've probably guessed, evangelism looks a lot different today than it did in the past. You know, think about your own experience. And this is something that I try to communicate. And I know that it sometimes maybe makes people feel bad, but things like door knocking, at least for these age groups, they don't want you coming to their house. They don't want to talk to you. You show up to their house and they're thinking, who are you and why should I trust or care about what you're saying? You know, things that we would usually do just don't work. They're not going to come to an event that we're putting out. They're religious or spiritual, but they're not going to show up in person. So we have to think a little bit differently. So just an example, one of the things that I do in my work is social media content, because that's where they are. And I'm not on social media personally, and I kind of hate it, but that's where people are. That's where they're getting all of their information and their social interaction, and that's where they're exploring their spirituality and all of that. And that's different than previous generations. You know, nobody's going to show up to a tent meeting anymore because they're not going to leave their couch. They don't want to leave their house. They don't want to talk to all of these people. Younger adults approach religion and spirituality different than others. So, for example, the millennials propelled this movement that you might have heard of, and if you haven't heard of the movement, maybe the names, the New Atheists. So that's Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, these different cultural thinkers that were a little bit older, but it was the new atheism, and it was, you know, they were very strong and very aggressive atheists. And millennials kind of pushed that along and supported it. And then when Generation Z came along, they said, that's all garbage. And it literally died overnight. How weird. They approached things completely differently. And Gen Z said, well, the new atheists don't care about the social justice issues and the personal impact of what they're saying, so we're not going to support that. And Richard Dawkins stopped selling books. He disappeared. Obviously, they're still around, and some of that's exaggeration, but it's totally different how people are approaching things now. And this is kind of really the question of how do we become all things to all people for them? It's going to be different than what we usually do. It also emphasizes the need for something that's called pre-evangelism. People aren't open to discussing religious and spiritual ideas in these younger generations anymore. If they don't know you, they're not open to it. They don't really care what you have to say about it. It's kind of that old adage that we hear of people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's very true, especially with Gen Z. They don't care if you have a PhD in biblical studies and what you think about the Bible if they don't know that you care about them and that you're sincere about what you're saying. And it doesn't matter who you are. It's a very different sort of thing. They have generally younger people today. And again, I could say all this because I'm smack dab in the middle of it and I understand what people are saying. They're not receptive to talking about spiritual things in the open air unless they perceive that they're in a supportive community. And ironically, that happens on like TikTok, where they feel like that's a supportive community and then people will explore spirituality on TikTok, but they're not going to talk to you about it. So for example, in Acts, the Jews and a lot of the Gentiles were in the synagogues and they were in the marketplaces. And what were they doing there? They were there because they wanted to talk about spiritual things. Whether that was the law or whether that was paganism, whatever it was. The synagogue and the marketplace were where they came together to do that. And we don't really have that anymore. Today, the closest thing to the marketplace or the synagogue is social media, which is wildly different. And the same type of openness or reception to talking about those things that we saw in previous generations or like you see in the book of Acts, it's not there. Really, kind of where the rubber meets the road for a lot of this, and that's the second part of the second bullet, is relationships are the key to making a difference. And that's really where the pre-evangelism thing comes in. You can't evangelize these people until you have a relationship with them. Because they don't care what you have to say unless they know that you care about them. So you can't stand really on a street corner and preach maybe like you could generations ago because they're not going to listen to you. Or they might argue with you about something because they don't like how you're doing it or it's perceived as being inauthentic. They're typically motivated by things like reviews from friends or referrals or a mutual connection of a trusted person. And so talking about something with you, you have to be a trusted person. Or you have to be a friend of a trusted friend. And you have to demonstrate that you care about them and that you have their well-being in mind. And then they'll be open to talking to you about it. And this is really different than how we usually do things because it feels like you're not actually preaching the gospel because you're not actually explicitly talking about anything right away. But for Salem and I, that's looked like just having people in our homes several times before we really even bring up anything explicitly spiritual because they just don't want to talk about it yet. They don't know about you. They're kind of unsure and they'd rather go sit and look at Instagram reels because that's safe. There's an inherent distrust of institutions in all of this. All kinds of institutions, whether that's the government or the education system or churches or whatever it is. They don't like institutions And that's because they feel like the institutions have failed them and have failed society. So I don't trust these authority figures because they haven't done what they were supposed to do. And so then they perceive someone on social media who comes across as sincere and like they care, and that's how someone gets a following. Because this person is real and they actually care about people, and so I'm going to listen to what they have to say, and I don't care what, you know, the scientist over here has to say about it. And if you pay attention, you can see those kind of trends, where the way that they think about things is a lot different. And from one of these reports, I grabbed this quote. It says, "Mental health, it turns out, is the biggest issue to address in order to do ministry that matters for young people." I think that's pretty true. They don't care until they know that you care. We can't just talk about things the way that we usually would because they're not being heard. And so there's a lot more upfront investment in people that has to happen, that pre-evangelism. And it sounds weird, and a lot of us are probably skeptical of that kind of stuff and say, this sounds like nonsense. But if you talk with younger people, you see that this is true. The world's solutions for happiness are showing themselves to not be true. And it's having an effect on people emotionally and mentally. And so we have to take care of that, basically. And we have to show how the gospel speaks to these parts of people. And we have to show how Jesus can help you with these issues. And that's a lot of what we're going to talk about. This provides an opportunity for us to show what the real solution, capital S, to life's problems is. We have a solution. One of the taglines that we put on the advertisements for our event in Metamora was, we want to share the solution that was shared with us. It's not as if we're some kind of authorities over you about it. It was given to us and we want to give it to you. And that's kind of the attitude that we have to come at with it. In one of the studies, this is just another quote from it. If the findings from this new study show anything, it's that the pursuit of mental health is not separate from the development of a vibrant and flourishing faith and spiritual life. Trusted adults in the lives of young people, but especially faith leaders, must be equipped to address both. So a few months ago, Salem and I were sitting and we were talking about the fact that it seems we have more young people in our group than we've had in many years. And we realized something, that all of them, including the two of us, are in counseling. Every single one. And I brought this to the elders' attention and said, this is obviously something that you need to be aware of. And it's an odd statistic that every single one of our young people and none of the older people are all in counseling. Why is that? And basically, what can we do about that? Things like that that we maybe not are thinking about. And there's different reasons that that might be the case. You know, in the Great Depression, for instance, my grandparents, you have to be in the cotton field and pick the cotton so that the family can eat. And it doesn't really matter if you're sad about it, because we'll die if you don't. And so you understand things like that, right? That they had to live first. It's not as if this was all malicious. But for a long time, it seems like maybe that part of being a human was ignored, and now younger generations are kind of taking it from the background and putting it as the most important, which is probably an overreaction too. But we can't separate emotional well-being and spirituality is basically the point that they're trying to shove us to. And they're right about that. We can believe all kinds of things up here and have all the right theology about things, but if it doesn't sink down here, it's not doing any good. And we're just like the Pharisees. So they're right about that. So So a lot of this comes to, we have to understand and communicate the gospel's grand story. And this is what we're going to do in the next lessons. Show how does the story of the Bible, and obviously with Jesus in particular, how does that speak to the world's problems? How does that speak to my problems? How does that help me with anything? And that's the questions that they're asking about this. What can Jesus help me with? What solutions is he giving for what I'm going through or what the world is experiencing? And those are the questions that they're asking. They're not really asking, is the Bible true and inspired anymore? They're asking, what can Jesus do for me? And does he care about justice in the world? It's different questions than have been asked in the past. So, for instance, a lot of those kind of apologetic things, like, is the Bible true? Does archaeology back up the Bible stories? They're not thinking about that stuff. They're thinking about, does Jesus care about me? Does he care about the poor and disadvantaged? Why do we believe in God when we see in the Old Testament that he commanded genocide? Those are the kind of things that they're asking about. And so how does the Bible's story speak to all of that? And what's the point? And what does it have to do with me? I want to share a quote. I don't know if any of you will know who this is. He's from the UK. Popular podcasts and things. His name's Justin Brierley, but he's an author and speaker. And I came across a video that he was speaking in, and I thought he said this so well with some of the things that I've been talking about. He said, we live in this prosperous, materially wealthy, technologically advanced age, and yet we're more depressed and anxious. Suicide rates are among young people are the highest they've ever been in the Western world. What is going on? Because you would think that we have all the solutions to that if life is supposed to be so much better, right? But he says it's because these stories that people are being given aren't working. The story of if you have a problem, just buy more stuff or listen to this person or just keep scrolling on Instagram, it's not working for people. These distractions that the world is throwing at them are showing themselves to be unsatisfactory because they're not actually answering what the real problem is deep down inside. They're not satisfying people the way that they want to be satisfied. And so he goes on to say, just maybe then, they're ready to hear the original story that shaped the world that we live in. And so pay attention. A lot of younger people are interested in stories, generally, but you know, what's your story? What's the story of that? They want to know, what's the story about Jesus in the Bible? How does that relate to me? And how does that relate to all this other stuff? And the fact that the story that the world is giving us isn't working means that they're looking for something else. And we see that in the fact that they're becoming more religious and spiritual, that they're open to that. They're looking for those kind of things. But you have to connect with them first before they'll listen to what you have to say. And so as we kind of move forward, tonight we talked about identifying the issues, and really that's the what. So what is going on? And tomorrow we're going to talk about what is the problem. These are the issues, but what's the actual problem here? So we're going to talk about the why. And as we're going through all of this, and you're hearing these things, I don't know all of you, so I don't know what your story is or where you are in all of these things. But if you hear something that makes you think about your life and makes you realize that you're wanting something more, I know for a fact that there are people here who will help you and that will care about you. And maybe you're already part of this group and you know that these people here care about you. And so now or any time in the future, you have an opportunity to make that known and to connect with people because Jesus does provide a solution to these problems.